welcome.
I'm sorry I was busy with the phone. What is your name?
Troy.
My name is Hanoff. Good to meet you. If you have difficulty pronouncing it, however you pronounce it, it's fine.
Yes.
Welcome. Come on in. Welcome. Hello. Nice to meet you. Welcome all. This is the first of a class, a series of classes that will be approximately 15 classes long. They will run through the holidays starting in September, ending around October 10th, 5th, it depends on the year. During the course of these 15 classes, you will receive all of the information that you will ever need in how to improve your life. And the only person who can improve your life is you. That's really the message that I teach. That's the message that I was given by my teachers. This is Kabbalah. Earlier, I was asked how long I've been teaching, which is about 20 years. I've been teaching about 10 years. I've been studying about 20 years. What I receive, what I get from the study of Kabbalah is the totality of everything. There are no limitations in the study of Kabbalah. Everything that is known in something called the quantum consciousness of humanity is available to you through the study of Kabbalah. Can everybody reach that level of consciousness to be able to receive all of that? The answer is yes. It's a function of what you are willing to do in committing yourself, in changing yourself to be a better person today than you were yesterday. That's really the message. That's what I received. The word Kabbalah means to receive. It's a Hebrew word, kabel. Essentially, its root, its structure is all about receiving. But before we get into the class today, I always start all of my classes with a meditation. I hope nobody is uncomfortable with this meditation. I will do it quickly, and I will do it without explanation. Typically, the class, I do a meditation explanation during the meditation. But because this is the first class and there are people here who have some background and there are people here who don't, we're going to start from square one with everybody not understanding anything. And I apologize if you have background and feel that it's below you or beneath you. You'll find quite quickly that you'll get information that is not something you've heard before, or you've heard before and now you'll hear it in a different way. I also start every class by reading a verse from the Zohar. And the purpose of that, again, we will explain in class number 3. Both the meditation and the Zohar understanding will come from class 3. If you know the Ana B'Koach, which is a Hebrew prayer, please join me because that is the basis of the meditation. Ana B'Koach, Gedula Chemincha, Tati Terurah. pekim l'yutach tzadik. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu nora. Kufrei shayin, sintet nun. Na gibor dor sheyehudcha kivavat amrem. Nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. Barchem tacharem esitkatcha tamid gamlem. Betetre gimel. Chasim kadosh birov tuvcha na'el adatach. Het kuf bet, tet nunayan. Yachid ge'e lamcha fene zokre kedushatach. Yud gimel lamed, hey zayim kuf. Shavateinu kabel Ushma tziyakatenu yodea talumot shenkufab sadiyutah. In the last line we say in a whisper, we refer to that whisper as silently, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malkuto Leolam Vayed. Those 42 letters, which is also 49 letters, were the tools that the Creator used to create the world. When we say that, we bring the power of creation into our life. The question is, do we have the vessel to handle that power of creation? I should also say one other thing. If you have friends who are atheists, you have friends who are agnostics, you have friends who are not Jewish, you have friends who are people, invite them to the class. Because the wisdom of Kabbalah is for every human being. It was given to all 70 nations at the time the Torah was given. I will also read a verse from the Zohar. I never picked the verse. I kind of let it flow. I want to do a short verse today only because it's a new class. We're reading from the Parasha of Pinchas. And the Zohar is the ultimate book that teaches what the essence of the Torah, the essence. You'll get a sense. Essentially, we don't understand the Zohar when we initially read it in the original language, which I will read. So, in its translation. You'll read the words, you'll hear the words, they're English. You should be able to understand them, but you can't. And that's okay. Sayi nom Adonai Eloheinu alein ma'asei yadeinu kunenei alein ma'asei yadeinu kunenehu. Tachatzi zakei likra v'chayo v'zakei likokara v'mimtatei. Bechayav amai begin hahu zaman de la ba'a le'it dabaka ba. Diktiv v'yama en v'yomer el eshet Adonav. Come and see. He was honored in his life and honored in his death. Why in his life? Because during the time that he did not want to cleave to Potiphar's wife, as it is written, but he refused and said to his master's wife, and that he hearkened not to her, to lie by her, or to be with her. For this reason he was honored in this world, since it is written, and she caught him by his garment, and he fled. and went outside. Because of that, he earned entry after his demise into the heavenly curtain that is in the sanctuary of the Holy of Holies. And so it was befitting to him, resulting that he received his due in this world and in the other world. English seems simple. So let's just refer to this while giving the background of the story. It's talking about Joseph having been sold as a slave into Egypt. He was a beautiful form, beautiful human being. The women of Egypt found him attractive, and his master's wife attempted to seduce him. And he played along because he was a slave. And there was an incident where everybody else was gone, and it was just the two of them in the house. And she attempted to seduce him. He desired her, and then said no. The result of which, he ended up in jail for 12 years. The result of which was he ended up being the second in command in Egypt at the end of the 12 years. All of that story is simply and easily understood. But here it says, and she caught him by his garment, and he fled, and went outside. So does that mean the outside the room, outside the house, or is it talking about a spiritual journey where he left his body? I'll leave that decision for you. That's the kind of understanding that you can gain. Which leads me to a request. I'm not picking on you, Laura, but please, look around the room and tell me what you see. It's not a trick question. It's a simple, describe the room as best you can.
Wow. Is it the level of
Okay. Does anybody disagree with her description of the room? Does anybody want to add to her description of the room?
Three women.
Okay. Yes.
Two speakers.
Two speakers, okay.
And a picture.
I'm sorry?
And a picture.
She had mentioned there was some beautiful pictures.
Purple curtain.
Okay, colors. Yellow walls. Anybody else?
Laptop
computer? Anything else?
There are 21 people that were supposed to come.
You don't see them? They are here.
They're either here on the phone,
they're here in their spirit because they made a commitment to come, and therefore their soul is here. And I don't want to talk about it at length, but our modern science teaches that if you're in New York and you decide that you want to visit California and walk on the beach, your footprints are created on the beach waiting for you to walk in them. When people make the commitment to come, they're here. You don't see them. But that's actually what I was going to add to the description, because not only do I see them, but I see a number of other entities, both positive and negative, who are here to listen to Torah. Wherever Torah is given, wherever Torah is spoken, angels and entities that are not so positive do gather and listen, because this world represents a significant aspect in the overall creation. And they come to listen. They come to learn. Because once you no longer have a physical body, what you can study is limited, and at the same time unlimited. And that paradox is part of what we will talk about next week or on Wednesday night. giving you some additional background in talking about the 15 classes, I am here for 5 weeks. I am hoping at the end of that 5 weeks you will feel comfortable enough to stay with listening to the classes through the conference call. Every class will be recorded. It'll be available online for you to listen over and over again, because you will hear things today that you think you understand, and then a month from now, somebody will say something, and you'll say, you know, I really didn't understand that. It's a different way of thinking about what Hanoch said. Let me go back and hear that again, and that tape, that recording will be available for you. The study of Kabbalah is a lifetime study. In 15 weeks, you will have all of the tools you need to change your life, to be what you want to be. And yet, it's a lifetime study. The sole aspect of what Kabbalah teaches is how to be a better person today than I was yesterday. I'm not defining what the word better means. You will. Because it's your life we are talking about. I'm going to hand out on the conference call. You probably can't hear my words because I'm walking away, but I'll be right back. Please don't turn the paper over. Everybody, don't turn it over. Don't be looking at it. If you have experienced this when you do finally turn it over, please don't share with anybody the answer. It's a simple question on the paper, which the people in the conference call can get on the website under the handouts for Class 1 on the Revealed Wisdom portion of the website, yeshem.com. When you turn the paper over, you will see an English sentence, and you are asked to count the number of the letter S. I'll give you 2 minutes to do that. Turn the paper over. Also give you a hint, if your English is not your first language, you have an advantage. One minute. I see some people are finished. Are you sure?
We'll only count once.
Okay. I forgot that. It's been a while since I've seen the instructions. 30 seconds. Okay, please stop. How many think there are 0 S? How many think 1? How many think 2? One person says 2. How many think 3? 4? 5? One person says 5. 6? 4 people say 6. 7? 8? One person says 8. 9? 10? Okay, I think everybody has voted. Bacha, I'm gonna read the letters. Please count the number of S that I mentioned. Every time I say it, just add one to your fingers, please. F-I-N-I-S-H-E-D. F-I-L-E-S-A-R-E. P-H-E-R-E-S-U-L-T. Z-O-F-Y-E-A-R-S. O-F-S-C-I-E-N-T-I-F-I-C. S-T-U-D-Y. C-O-M-B-I-N-E-D. W-I-T-H-T-H-E. E-X-P-E-R-I-E-N-C-E. O-F-Y-E-A-R-S. Six? Everybody agree there's six? Can you explain to me why you thought it was different than that? I know. Yes, Joe.
I counted all F's on eight.
Okay. Oh, so you counted F's lower down as well. Okay. And how many F's did you get?
I got six.
Okay. And how many are there in the sentence? There are six. So if you counted on the other rest of the paper and you got six, it means you missed some of the S in the sentence. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just giving you an understanding of what happens. Why do you think people make mistakes?
Is it an obstacle?
It is
a mistake of that brain, so it's not like the brain can be there.
Well, we see upside down. The light from the bottom comes to the top. The light from the top comes to the bottom. And now our brain has to transpose that back right side up. And all through that process, which is a miracle, a miraculous process, but all through that process, there is room for mistakes. Yes?
Does that mean you look through a mirror and your words are coming through it?
Well, if you look through a mirror, the words can be reversed, and it will be easier for you to not make mistakes because you're looking at something in a more real way. But still, people will make mistakes. Anybody else as to why people will make mistakes on this simple task? It is a simple task, isn't it? Why do people make mistakes?
They overlook the obvious.
They overlook the obvious. Why do you
listen to instruction?
Okay. Why do you think both of those things are true? Typically, we overthink things, but when I first was handed this test, and I was a student like you, and I was given these instructions, I didn't get it right. And the reason I didn't get it right was my ego. Because every time I read the word of, O-F, I saw a V, not an F. Because in English, we pronounce of like a V. And so as I'm running through these words and I'm, you know, this is simple, why am I playing with this? And I got it wrong. Because my ego got in the way. I know. And therefore, why am I playing with this? This is a waste of time. It's not a waste of time. It's a way of you starting to realize something that I'm going to tell you now that is the most important thing you will learn today. But before I tell it to you, I want you to understand, never believe a word I tell you. Ever. I am not here to prove anything to you. I am here to give you information for you to prove to yourself what works in your life. And what doesn't. And it's very simple. At the end of the 15 weeks, the 15 classes, end of 3 months, end of 6 months, your life will be different if you do the things I suggest. You don't want to do them? That's fine. Come, receive what you wish to receive from this class. It's up to you. How much you invest in the process, how much you start to look at the world as an illusion, because this world is an illusion. As Laura described the room, she was describing the physicality. As I was describing the room, I was describing it on two levels, the physical and another level, which we'll call the spiritual. But there's even another level I didn't describe, which I can see and you all can see. You look at a chair, and it's made up of atoms, according to the scientists. And the atoms are made up of space and other components. Are we able to see those? The answer is yes. They shout out to us all the time. We don't hear them. Because our ego says, this is the real world. If I can't see it physically, it must not exist. If I know how many F's are in this sentence, why do I have to bother to count them? There is a story told in the Talmud, and for those of you who do not have the Jewish background, the Talmud is a book, more than a book, it's a wisdom of Jewish sages that was written about the year 100 to 400. It was written in Babylonia, which is now Persia, which is now Iran. And it was written in a way, allegorical way. So the wisdom is not 2 plus 2 is equal to 4. The wisdom is a story about two apples being connected to two oranges and becoming four things. It's easy to understand, but it is never explaining the deepest level. The deepest level only comes from the Zohar. But the Talmud explains many, many things of how to do things properly. What does it mean? What am I saying, how to do something properly? Do you know how to tie your shoe? Your parents taught you, your mom taught you, your teacher taught you, somebody taught you to tie a shoe. Do you know you're doing it right or wrong? Is everybody taught the same way? The Talmud tells us to tie our right shoe first and then our left. Why? We'll come to understand that. It's not important for this discussion. The point is, our egos tell us, I'm doing it right. And by that statement and that consciousness, we limit what we learn. The story in the Talmud is about a father and a son, both righteous people, both sages, both students of Torah. The son had a dream. He woke up, and his father said, I saw you were sleeping. I didn't want to disturb you. Please, tell me about what you saw. The father heard the son say, I saw a world that looked upside down. People that were... Please join us. Please, the world is upside down. The people who are in this world are considered high, are wealthy, are powerful, are important people. In that world, they were
low. They were not important people. And the people who were low in this world, who people didn't consider important, they are high in that world. The father looked at his son and said, "No, you misunderstand. The world you were dreaming about is the real world, and this world is the illusion. This class will teach you, if you are open to learn it, that this world is an illusion. I will not prove it to you. You've begun to prove it to yourself. You saw the number of F's on the page. Correct? Were you correct? Or were you wrong? And even if you were correct, were you really correct?" I will tell you another story. This is a wonderful story, and it's a little lengthy. It's a story of a period of the Baal Shem Tov about 300 years ago. In that story, or in that time, a lot of the Jewish world lived in what was called shtetls, little villages in Eastern Europe. And the priority of the Jewish world was to study Torah, study Talmud, become expert, and afterwards go into some form of business. And wealthy people went to the yeshivas, to the schools, to find a husband for their daughters. And the way they evaluated these men was to see who was the best student, who knew the most Torah. So there was a father who went to the yeshiva to look for a husband for his daughter. And he asked the head of the yeshiva who he should pick. And the yeshiva pointed to this young man and described his knowledge of Torah, his greatness in Torah, how he potentially would be a tremendous Torah scholar. And the father said, "That's perfect for my daughter. He's the one I want." So they went and they made a shidduch. They made a contract. The son, the young boy, would marry his daughter, and he would study Torah every day, all day long, and he would be supported by his father-in-law. There was just one condition. The way business was done in those days, people went to market. The little shtetls went to the larger villages. The larger villages went to the city. Wealthy people would go to the city to purchase goods to bring back to the shtetls. And this is how business was done, was accomplished. The agreement was the Torah scholar would study Torah all the time, except 2 weeks a year he was to go with his father-in-law to the city. His father-in-law would give him money, he would give him advice, but he had to buy the material that he would live off of the rest of the year. He had to learn and accomplish on his own. And there was a spiritual reason why he needed to do this. So the boy agreed, the wedding takes place, a year goes by, and it's time for market. The father-in-law picks up his son at the yeshiva. "Let's go to market for 2 weeks. Here's your 100,000 rubles. You hold on to it. When I get to town, we'll look around. We'll see what's a good thing to purchase. I will give you the advice. Everything will be fine. And this is the money that you will live off for the next year." They get to the city, and what does the boy know? He knows to go study Torah, so he goes to the shul and to the yeshiva, and he starts studying. And his father-in-law says, "Aren't you going to go buy something?" No, you're going to tell me what to buy. I don't know anything. I'll listen to you. Whatever you say, I'll buy. Father-in-law says, all right. So he goes to the market while the boy is studying. And in comes, into the shul comes a merchant, sits down next to the boy, and says, I have black velvet to sell you. And the boy says, how much black velvet do you have? I have 100,000 yards, or meters, at a ruble a meter. And the boy says, is that a good deal? I don't know. Is that a good deal? We're in a shul. You've got to tell me the truth. Is it a good deal? And the merchant said, it's a great deal. So the boy says, okay. They do the transaction. The boy is now the owner of 100,000 meters of black velvet. When his father-in-law comes back, the shrying you heard in Los Angeles from Europe. How could you buy 100,000 meters of black velvet? How? You sell 2 meters a year. You have 100,000 meters, it's going to cost you a fortune to store it. And on and on and on. But the money is gone. It's been paid. He is the owner of 100,000 yards or meters of black velvet. The market closes. The father-in-law knows he has to support his daughter and his son-in-law. So nothing's really changed. They go back. The boy goes back to school, to yeshiva. He's studying Torah. And every Friday night for Shabbat, the father-in-law berails the boy for his mistake. This boy will never make this mistake again. How could anybody buy something that somebody told you was a good deal? How could you do this? Is this normal business? Weeks go by. Months go by. There comes a pounding on the door. 2 o'clock in the morning. This is not a good sign in a Jewish house. We have history of pogroms. We have history of danger. We have history of pain and suffering. Chaos. 2 o'clock in the morning, pounding on the door is not a good sign. It's still true today. It was true then. The boy gets up. He goes down. He opens the door. And who comes in but the soldiers, the police and the soldiers? Are you Moshe, who owns the black velvet? The boy is so frightened he can't even say. He's stammering. He cannot say his name. He can't even say the word yes. He is so frightened. The soldiers are in his house. He knows he's dying. He knows he's going to be killed. Finally, he gets out, yes. Where is the black velvet? It's stored in the barn over three towns over. Because who can store 100,000 meters of black velvet? The soldier says, how much do you want for it? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? How much do you want for it? I don't know. We'll give you 100 rubles for every meter. The boy is so overwhelmed. He doesn't know what to say. He can't say anything. He stammers. The soldier says, 200. He stammers. He doesn't know what to say. The soldier says, all right, I'll give you 400, but that's it. If you don't say yes, I'm going to kill you. That, with that threat, he was able to say yes. The soldier gets ready. They sign the paperwork. Everything is done. The boy says, why do you want the black velvet? You didn't hear? The king died. The Tsar died. Before he died, he had a dream that he wanted his hearse to ride on black velvet from the church to the cemetery. And you're the only person who has black velvet in this country. What is real and what is not real? Is that a story? It's a story that's told in Jewish circles for the last 300 years. I'll tell you another story that happened in the 1950s. For those of you who know the diamond trade, many Jewish people are in the diamond business. Everybody knew that there was a surplus of diamonds, except Moshe. Moshe is a nice man, been in the diamond business for 20 years. He did his business, he made his living, but he was not real bright. He didn't follow trends. He did his business. Everybody knew diamonds were going to be a surplus. So Moshe was getting all kinds of offers for diamonds at a discount. These are great deals. Buy. Somebody else called. Yes, of course, at that price I have to take it off your hands. Somebody comes into the office. Yes, at this price, with this discount, I will buy from you. This went on for weeks. Everybody knew there was a surplus of diamonds. What do you think happened? Diamonds are controlled by a consortium of people, primarily out of South Africa, and there was a mine explosion. And the production of diamonds was curtailed, and the price of diamonds shot up double. Nobody had diamonds because they'd all sold it to Moshe. Moshe all sold it back at his profit. What is the real world, and what is the illusion? You buy a stock, it goes up, it goes down, it goes sideways, and then it goes up again. What is real? Is it the moment that you bought it? The moment that you sell it? Or the moment you got the thought to even consider buying it? We live in a world that is illusionary. There is no... It's not real. The Kabbalists teach, and the words that they use, they say there's a spiritual world, which is the real world. It represents 99% of reality. And there's our physical world, which is an illusion, but has 1% of reality within it. There is reality in our illusionary world, but it's so mixed, you don't know what's right. Do I marry this person or not? He asked me to marry him. Should I do it or wait? Will there be somebody else down the road? Do you see down the road? Do you see the end of time? Do you see next week? How about you see an hour from now? What are you going to be doing? Why can't you see that? Isn't that information available to us? We're taught that in the spiritual world, time is in reverse. Their future is our past for a 30-day period. This is what is taught in the Talmud. This is what is taught in Kabbalah. Why 30 days? A whole other discussion. Everything is known. For the next 30 days, everything is known. What you're going to have for breakfast, where the car accidents, God forbid, are going to happen, where the oil spills will take place using a modern, today's stories. Everything is known. Do you know it? Why not? It's available to you. The Talmud teaches us, the Zohar teaches us, There's a voice comes out every day from heaven to tell you what's going to happen today. Are you listening? Do you want to listen? Most of us would want to listen. Most of us would not want to marry the woman that becomes a mistake, or the man that becomes a mistake that we have to have a divorce. Most people would want to marry somebody for life. Why doesn't it happen? Because you're not listening. When he asked you to marry him, there was a voice. Yes, no. You didn't hear it. Kabbalah promises to teach you how to hear that voice. Because that voice is within you right now. It's telling you, sit here, or telling you, this guy is so crazy, I gotta leave. Which is the choice? Which is truth? And for each of you, truth is different. How do I know truth is different? Let me tell you a story. I want you to visualize a fish tank. It has six sides. Most of the time, we only think of a fish tank as having four sides. But there's a top and a bottom also. On the right side, the color of that pane of glass is silver. And on the left side, it's red. And in the side facing me, it's yellow. And the sign in the back is blue. The side in the farthest from me is blue. The colors on the panes of glass are different colors. The pane of glass covering the top, there is no pane of glass. So I can see clearly if I'm looking through the top. And the pane on the bottom, I can't see at all because it's opaque. Now I'm standing on the right side of the glass, and I ask, there's really four people, me and three other people. We're all asked the same question at the same time. What color is the fish? What is the man on the right going to say? Silver. Because the glass is silver. What is the person on the left going to say? The fish is red. The one in the back? Those fish is blue. And I'm certain the fish is yellow. Am I telling the truth? I know the fish is yellow. I see it clearly. Is that the truth? Is that the reality? Yes or no?
No.
Why not?
Because there's other colors.
There's other colors. The man on the left who sees it red, isn't he telling the truth? For him, isn't the fish red? He lives in a world that has red fish. It is truthful. But is it true? How do I find out what is true? How do I learn what is the truth? We live in a world that has many, many churches, many, many different paths of spirituality. A temple, a synagogue, a church, a mosque. These are all paths to spirituality. And they all compete with each other. They won't say that. But they all compete with each other for your attention. And there's even a church of science. And there's even a church of atheists. All paths asking the question that sometime each of us in our lives have asked, why was I born? Why am I here? And what am I supposed to do? And the answer, according to Kabbalah, is truth is in you. How do I see What is the color of the fish? All I have to do is climb to the top of the fish tank and look down. And then I can see that the fish is really green. But the fish is red to the man on the left, and blue to the man in the back, and yellow to me. Are we wrong? No, we're not wrong. This is the illusion we live in at that moment. But the truth is to know that the fish is green. If you're searching for truth, you have to climb to the top. And this story is a metaphor for raising your consciousness. That's what we will do in these 15 classes. If you choose to do the things I suggest to you, your consciousness will be raised. What you do with that raised consciousness, do you climb to the top to see the green fish? Or do you just climb a little higher on the same side? It's all up to you. What you do is up to you. I am never going to prove anything to you. I cannot prove to you that the fish is silver, or the fish is green, or the fish is yellow. Only you can prove to yourself the color of the fish.
For those on the conference call, I'm walking away. I'll be back in a second. Please keep it upside down. Take two each. Turn them over. I reason I'm giving you two. Take one off. Don't write on one of them so you can take it home and play with it. It's a puzzle. It's a simple puzzle. Take a pencil. Once you put the pencil on the paper, make four straight lines that includes all nine dots. The simplest way to do it, which does not work, is to start at the lower left, go to the right 3, up 3, across 3, and then diagonally down. And you'll see that you get 8 dots, not 9. That's just an example for you to understand it all. You have 2 minutes. I apologize.
For those on the conference call, this paper is also in the handout under Class 1 on the YSHM website. Have you done it before? One minute. Can you cheat? Yes, but you can't lift the pen off the paper. Actually, I shouldn't say yes. I took away your free choice. The answer is, if you want to cheat, you have the ability to cheat. But you also get the consequences of cheating. Okay. 30 seconds. if you've done, Troy, if you've seen it before, would you do it one so that we can pass it around? No, I'm talking to Troy behind you. Do, if not, I'll do it. When I'm, but it's just, you have, I think you have a pen, maybe. I don't. 15 seconds. You give up? That's why I told you to take two, so you can take it home and play. Stop. So, besides Troy, did anybody do it?
No.
Okay. Troy, did you do it the first time you were shown this, or is?
No.
You had to be shown the answer. Ready? I'm going to show you the answer. You don't have to take it home. Actually, I'm not sure how to do it. The way I do it is 1, 2, 3, 4. You have to go outside the box twice. Pass it around. Troy, what did you learn by going outside the box? Very good. Why did you limit yourselves to staying in the box? It is impossible to do all 9 dots inside the box. Mathematically, there are some strange people who are mathematicians who don't think like the rest of us, who have proven that it is mathematically impossible to do that. But go outside the box, and it's a simple action. And that series of rules starts with, this world is real. And I'm telling you, this world is an illusion. Think outside the box. Stop limiting yourself. What do you learn by the fact that you have to go out of the box twice? You can't just go out once, you have to go out twice. What do you learn from this? That's next week.
One more task. I'll be back to the conference call in a second.
While you're discussing, I haven't told you to turn it over yet, I'm sorry. I guess I wasn't thinking outside the box, was I? Turn it over. You have another sentence in English. You are again being asked to count the letter F. And while you're counting, I'm going to talk a little bit about some housekeeping issues. I teach Kabbalah. I teach what I teach. And what I teach is how to enhance your consciousness so that you hear when you're lost driving or in your life decisions, how you can hear the correct direction. When you drive up to a Y, a dead-end street, you dead-ended street, you turn left or right, and you're not sure where you're going, you've never been there before, go left or go right. You can ask yourself and receive an answer and always be right. That's what you can learn through Kabbalah. I will be teaching this for 5 weeks that I'm in San Diego. It's a 15-class course. Since I'm in San Diego, I've scheduled it twice a week, which is unusual. Usually these classes are taught once a week because to do it more rapidly sometimes is overwhelming for people. But I have limited time. I need to be in other locations teaching other people. While I'm here, please make use of me. Utilize me. My phone number, email, physical visits, Skype, however you want to do it. When I leave San Diego in 5 weeks, I will continue to do these classes on the conference call. We can arrange, if you're thinking about it, we can arrange that we do a Skype session, everybody meet in somebody's home who has Skype on their computer, and we have everybody watching me. There are technology today from an Israeli company called Uvu, where you can have up to 6 different video locations. All of this is become, at that point, everything I've talked about except for the Uvu is free. The Uvu has a slight charge. Which brings the discussion. I teach Torah. Torah is a gift from the Creator. Earlier in the class, I said if you knew somebody who was an atheist, they still can use the tools that Kabbalah teaches. They still, you do not have to believe there is a Creator. You do not have to believe there is God. To use the tools that the Creator has given you. For me, there is a Creator. For someone else, there isn't a Creator. But we both have access to the same tool. God does not care if you believe in Him or you don't. If I drop this paper, will it fall to the floor? You believe it will fall to the floor, or you know it will fall, or you know it will fall to the floor. You know it will fall to the floor. The promise is that I won't reach my hand out and catch it before it falls down. I won't summon an angel to come pick it up out of the air. I will let it fall through the natural process of gravity. It's going to hit the floor. Based on that, we all know it will fall to the floor. The first of the Esser Dibrot, what most people call the Ten Commandments, and they are not commandments, but that's a whole other discussion. The first of the Esser Dibrot says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God, your God. There's no command in that statement. That is the first of the Esser Dibrot. And the sages come to teach us, the Zohar comes to teach us, that that is a suggestion to know God. Why didn't you say that I know this will fall to the floor? Why do we say I believe in God? Why don't we say I know God? In our system, I'm sorry?
Well, I think he said that you asked them if you believe, then ask them.
Yeah, I use the word, do you know this paper is going to fall to the floor? Do you know there is a God?
Yes.
Do you know God?
No.
You're not comfortable making that statement. You're not comfortable stating, I know God. And if I was sitting with somebody who was a professed atheist, he'd say, how can I know God? He doesn't exist. The bottom line is, when you say, I believe, you automatically imply doubt. I'm not sure there is a God. If you know God, you know God. There's no doubt. The tools are usable by people whether they know God or they don't know God. One of the tools, many of the tools, are enhanced by the consciousness of certainty, which is something we'll talk about. But ultimately, I started out this class by saying, this world is an illusion. I think, I hope I have demonstrated to you through the various stories and papers, tests, that this world is an illusion. Maybe I haven't, and that's okay too. I invite you back to class Wednesday night at 7:30. We are going to need to discuss, once we get off the conference call, the location. Because that one class, that location fell through, but the rest of the classes are all set. Next class will be a discussion of what took place before the Big Bang. It will be a description of the Big Bang as it's taught in religious circles, and a description of the process of history as taught from a Jewish perspective, meaning the biblical perspective, which continues today. There's still a Bible being written today. You know who's writing it? You are. You continue to write the Bible every day. It didn't just come from Moses' writing or from people's writings, as many people have hypothesized. But we'll talk about that next week. How many? Letter S? 1, 2, 3, 13. He didn't do the first one. Do you think he's right? How many agree with him? 2 people agree with him? Or 2 people say 13. How many say 12? 2 say 12. 3 say 12. How many say 14? 3. There's 1 F in Franklin, the 2nd F in Featherstone, 3rd F in Referred, 4th F in Father, 5th in Of, 6th in Refrigerated, 7th in Freight, 8th in Of, 9 and 10 in efforts, 11 in benefits, 12 in of, 13 in form, 14 in of, total is 14. Now here you were all taught, except for you two, you were all taught how to do this. How many of you got it right? 2, 3. Our egos will continue to get in the way till we start to think outside the box. And one final part of, this is the part I really don't like. I had started to mention, I teach Torah. Torah is a gift from the Creator, whether you believe in the Creator, whether you know a Creator. Torah is a gift. It cannot be charged for. We live in a society that's very clear. I have bills that have to be paid. I spend time to be with you. I am hungry to teach you. Not for financial reward, but I do have bills, so I request donations. Donations are up to you. They're over there. I don't care. You want to write a check? Put a check in the bottle. You want us to do a credit card? Go home, go to PayPal, and send it through PayPal, because I don't have access to credit card systems. But through PayPal, it'll arrive. And whatever you wish to do with respect to donation is appreciated and will be utilized to further the teaching of this material. Does anybody have any questions before we finish the class? Yes.
So, you're not able to come, so can we show another conference?
Absolutely. Yes. And you can, the conference call system is a separate from the San Diego Kabbalah system. So if you send me an email and ask to have a reminder by the conference call, I'll send an email in every one of my classes. I teach this, right now I'm teaching five times a week. The next class is Tuesday night, which is it's the Los Angeles group that basically I'll be talking about the three-week period that starts Monday night. And I will mention this to you in a minute, what that is. Wednesday, I will be teaching this class at 7:30 and another class at 10 o'clock. That class talks about the mitzvot and what is the kavanah and the consciousness and why of a given mitzvot. The one that we will do this week is called, it's a mitzvah that says to love every Jew. And it actually means to love every person who's on a spiritual path. It doesn't mean to love every Jew who's a halakhic Jew, someone born from a Jewish mother or converted from through a proper path. A Jew is someone who's on a spiritual path. And I'll explain that on that class if you're interested. On Thursday night is our Zohar class. And literally what I do is just as I did with this verse from the Zohar today, we read the verse in Aramaic because that's where the energy is. We translate it into English, and then typically I will give a commentary to almost every verse because most people, as part of their process, and mine also, continuing to expand our consciousness, we don't understand what the Zohar is saying on its simple level. We need to delve deeper. And then Sunday, again, is our class. So for this class, if you're interested, you're welcome to any of the conference calls at any time. And if you ask, tell me which ones you're interested in, and I'll send you email reminders for that. This coming Tuesday, we need to find a location. Wednesday, we need to find a location. If anybody has one, you can see we're talking about 10 to 12 people. If so, and next Sunday we will be here at 10 o'clock as well.
Yes.
Right here. And this, would people rather come at 11 rather than 10 on Sunday?
Yeah.
You prefer 11? How many like 10? Okay, 10 it is. I do want to mention one thing that normally I would not mention in an early class like this because it's dealing with the Hebrew letters, which you're not going to get to till the third class. One of the tools of Kabbalah is the calendar, because the calendar is not marching time. The calendar is marching attributes of energy. What do I mean by attributes of energy? There are times when it is positive, and starting new things like marriages and businesses and new homes, those are better times than another time when it's negative. Our cycle of time has both positive and negative within it. The three most negative weeks of the year start Monday night. They're called, it starts on the 17th day of Tammuz, and it ends on the 9th day of Av. Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, is the day that both temples were destroyed.
It was the day that the Jews were expelled from Spain in 1492. It was the day that the final solution to the Jewish problem was signed by Adolf Eichmann on Tisha B'Av. Yeah. And that's just a few of the things that have happened on Tisha B'Av. It is the most negative day of the year, and at the same time, it's the happiest day of the year. It's the birth date of the Messiah, the Mashiach. Understanding these energies is very complex. Understanding these energies is part of what Kabbalah teaches. During these 3 weeks, there is a meditation to be utilized to help you handle the energy. Because ultimately, there's one assumption in Kabbalah that I'll be talking about next week. God is good. Don't believe a word I said. Prove this to yourself as we learn. God is good. Look around the world. People have car accidents. People get sick. How could God be good? There was a Shoah, a Holocaust. How could God be good? One assumption. God is good and wants to give you good. You have to learn how to receive good. One of the tools is this energy, this calendar. These 3 weeks, God wants to give you good, but we don't know how to receive it. The meditation, it is on the website. And I only brought the computer to show you this. This is the opening website. It's Yeshem, YeshShem.com. And if you go down here, it says Unique Astrological Times. And click on that. And then you scroll down to the 3 week meditations. And those meditations are there for you to utilize. Print out www.yeshem.com. On that website, you'll find the recording tomorrow afternoon. On that website, you'll see all of the recordings. You'll find different information that you didn't know about. You'll find ways to know how God is speaking to you through the Torah, through the Tanakh, the Torah, the prophets and the writings. That's built into the website. I would suggest you spend time on the website. You should end up with questions from it, and if not, that's okay. It's about what you put into this subject. If you are looking for an easy path, don't come to study Kabbalah. But if you're looking for a path that will make your life chaos-free, stay and spend the effort. That is the promise. Your life will become chaos-free. Did I say it would become chaos-free today? Did I say next week? Did I say a month from now? Did I say the end of the classes? Your life becomes chaos-free based on how well you learn the lessons and how well you choose to change yourself. I'm just here to give you information. I hope you'll use it to make changes in your life. Any other questions? Have a beautiful week. Remember, you're going to get inundated with opportunities to become angry starting Monday night for 3 weeks. Try not to. The meditations that are there will help you.